welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This is Jessica. How is everybody doing? You guys, I have the best episode for you today. It is with a beloved guest, one of your very favorite people I had on last year on episode number 43. It's Kelsey Nixon. And at the time, she was talking about being in the middle of her grief after losing her sweet little baby Leo. And a lot has changed for Kelsey and her whole family in the last year. Today, she's giving us a positive update on what's been going on, where they're living as a family, how big their family is, if that gives you a clue. There is so much joy in Kelsey's life to date, but that's not to take away from the hardship she faced over the last few years after losing her sweet baby. So today, we're going to talk about that transformation of how her life looks drastically different in only a year's time, and how she's able to process through that and what her life looks like today. She is such an amazing, amazing example to me as an extraordinary mom. And I know you're going to love getting this update from Kelsey today. Let's get to it. All right. I want to welcome back Kelsey Nixon. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi, Jessica.
How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me again.
Oh, well, it's such an honor to have you back because everyone loved your episode last time. It was so meaningful, even though it was a really hard episode to talk about, I'm sure, for you. It was really powerful to the listener. So thank you for opening up last time.
Of course, and I appreciated the opportunity. It ended up being a very cathartic experience for me as well. And I really hope it maybe helped some of your listeners who have been there or have friends that have been there. So it ended up being a wonderful experience for me also.
I'm so glad. And sometimes people are hesitant to open up because they feel like it's too hard. Right. And it's like, I'm not over the hump yet. And so they feel like maybe it's too early to share. But I think even in the midst of a hard challenge, there can be a lot of power and strength and validation that comes from just admitting where you're at right then.
Absolutely. And feeling like it's okay to be honest with where you're at, because as I have gone through the challenges that I've gone through, I think that it's easy for guilt to creep in when you are feeling differently than you think you should be feeling. I should be feeling better by now, or how dare I be angry at God? That's awful to be angry at God. And then all of a sudden you're beating yourself up even more when you're going through something so challenging. And that's not good for anyone. So I think the honesty is really important as well.
I absolutely agree that honesty is huge for people. And I was listening to a podcast the other day about going first. And by opening up and sharing your story and by being brave and going first, it gives the other people the opportunity to go second, right? And some people, you know, find it within themselves to be able to go first, but it really gives other people the permission to go second. And that can be a really huge gift that you give other people.
Sure. And there were definitely people that I would consider went first for me as I was able to open up as well. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
That's great. So for people that haven't listened, you are on episode number 43. This is almost exactly a year ago, which is really exciting because a lot's happened for you. So Kelsey, for people that may not be familiar, would you just give a little background on yourself and your family?
Sure. So I am Kelsey Nixon Egan, and I am a food personality. I have a cooking show on Cooking Channel, Food Network, author of a cookbook. That's kind of what I do professionally, but I'm a mom to Oliver. And about 2 years ago, we had a little baby named Leo who came super early at 25 weeks gestation, weighing only 15 ounces. And he fought for about a month in the NICU before eventually passing away. And it was really awful for our family. It was my second complicated pregnancy. And after that, we were told or advised to not pursue future pregnancies. So a year ago when I was speaking to you, it had been about a year since Leo's death. And I was really still very much in the thick of my grief, and my grief will always be there and present for me, but I was in a very different place. Not only was I grieving the loss of my son, but I was very much grieving that loss of not being able to carry any more children. And since then, that has changed for us in a very unique way. Not that I've been able to carry children, but that we've been able to grow our family.
Yes, and we're going to talk more about that. I'm so excited. And so going back to that time a year ago, and in the months right after we spoke, where were you at emotionally? And as you envisioned growing your family, but knowing that it was not advice for you to carry a baby, what were your options? And where are you at emotionally with grappling with that reality?
Well, I'm going to go back to just a bit before I spoke to
sure.
you, a few months before that, where, you know, grief is so different for so many people and different under different circumstances. But for me, the first 6 months after I lost my son, I was so sad. I was just so, so sad. And then my sadness turned to anger. And I actually much preferred being sad to being angry. Mm. And I spent a lot of time being angry. And I still have days where I feel very angry that we went through this. And it seems unfair. And it's even still hard to hear stories of babies miraculously, you know, surviving at 22 weeks or 23 weeks and thinking, well, why wasn't that us?
Yeah.
And so I was feeling very angry. But when I spoke to you a year ago, we actually had also been through a failed round of IVF.
Wow.
As with a surrogate. And we were embarking on our second round of IVF, and I believe we had just done the transfer, and I was waiting to find out if it worked.
You were?
I was, but I have to tell you, it was not like this happy, hopeful time.
Right.
Especially after our failed IVF, I was certain it wasn't going to work, and so I was very stressed with that as well. Not only the grief that I still felt so tangibly, but I was also so stressed about in the throes of fertility treatments and how are we actually going to get a baby here? And this was supposed to work for us and it didn't work for us. So it was a complicated time.
Sure. Why did you even want to talk to me right then?
I don't know. You know what's so funny about that, Jessica, is that you reached out and I really had been quite private up until that point.
Sure.
And you had sent an email and I don't know why I responded and said, yes, I'd love to talk with you. It was kind of a fluke in that I just kind of seized the moment where I thought, you know, maybe I do want to talk about this. And
whoa.
I think that we did the interview just a day or two later.
Yes.
And I'm so glad it happened because I think if I had thought about it more, I maybe wouldn't have done it. And it ended up being so beneficial for me and hopefully other people as well.
Oh my gosh. No, and it was a fluke. I just felt prompted to email you and just reach out saying, I've heard about your story. I'm so sorry. In the event you want to talk about it, I'd love to have you on. So I wasn't even like, come on the show. We'd love to have you. You know, it wasn't that tone, but I was really surprised when you emailed back and we made it happen really quickly. And so I'm so honored and so touched that you were able to preserve that time in this hour interview that we had last year.
Yeah.
Because it really, if you were to go back now, I mean, that's such an integral part of your story and your life and of Leo and remembering, and as hard as it might be to go back to those memories, it's still a part of your story, which I think is really beautiful.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I've tried to journal throughout my grief and whatnot, but I also think there's something really special about having an audio record of those feelings that that one might go through as you experience a tragedy like this. And I think of my children or grandchildren and having access to hearing that.
Sure.
I have a grandmother who lost her first two babies as well, and she passed away just a couple years ago, and I have thought countless times that I would have given anything to be able to talk to her about losing those babies or have any sort of record that felt really tangible to reference what she went through and how she felt. And I think it's important for me to leave that for any posterity that may come and find
sure.
themselves in a similar situation.
I love that. I think that's a great way to look at it. And so after that first round of failed IVF, which I'm so sorry about, that had to be such a blow. It's like, what else? What else, God? You
yes,
know? And for somebody,
I know. And so, you know, after Leo passed away, I instantly became consumed with how are we going to grow our family? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's all sorts of opinions about whether that is healthy or not healthy, if I needed to give myself more time or space. But given my type A personality, I really needed to be proactive in getting my family here. And that mm-hmm. is what felt most therapeutic to me, is putting a plan in place to mm. see my son become a brother and to see our family grow. And it was going to be complicated, whether it was through adoption or it was through surrogacy. That was going to take a long time, and I knew that. And so basically the way this unfolded was shortly after Leo's death, actually at his funeral, my sister-in-law, named Betsy, said to my husband and I, you know, I seriously would love the opportunity to carry a baby for you guys, and I want you to think about it. It's a serious offer, but if you would like to move forward with that, I would rather do it sooner rather than later. She was getting a little older, and her kids were, you know, in high school and getting ready to graduate and all things like that. It was the best timing in her life for something like this.
Wow.
And we felt like it was such a unique opportunity and offer, and we felt very strongly that it was something that we should seriously explore. And so at my 6-week follow-up after I'd had Leo, so this would have been about 2 weeks after he passed away, my doctor sat down and said very seriously, I highly discourage you from future pregnancies, but you are an excellent candidate for gestational surrogacy because of your age. And the problems you have with pregnancy don't seem to be tied to your babies genetically. It's all uterine-based. Mm. And so she said, I think that would be a wonderful thing for your family to consider should you want to have more children. And so I hadn't even shared with my doctor that my sister-in-law had approached us with this offer. So between my doctor freely suggesting that and my sister-in-law offering that on the table, my husband and I felt that it was absolutely important for us to pursue researching this to see if we felt good about it. So and my doctor had been wonderful, and she was very proactive to get me into a fertility doctor that she works with at Columbia. And so she got me an appointment quite quickly, which probably would have taken much longer, but that was very kind of her. And I saw a fertility doctor on May 1st, and I had lost my son on March 29th. So it was very, very soon. But for me, I just needed something. I needed a project. I needed something to consume my mind, and nothing was more important to me than growing my family. Mm-hmm. So while that may not have been the best approach for everyone as they were grieving a child, for me and my personality and my family, it is exactly what I needed. And that kind of started the process of our fertility treatments.
Wow. That
is kind of crazy.
That is super crazy. And then what happened? Just keep going.
Yeah, so and you know, there's so many elements to the story. But Betsy, so she's based in Idaho, and we were based in New York City, and so I was seeing a fertility doctor in New York, and she was independently seeing a separate fertility doctor in Idaho. You know, she was going to sacrifice so much for our family. We wanted to do everything we could to make this as easy for her as possible. So we did research on fertility clinics in both places. She basically had been evaluated to see if she was a good candidate to be a gestational carrier. Mm-hmm. Just quickly, the difference between a gestational carrier and a surrogate can be a little cloudy at times. Mm. But technically the term is gestational carrier when the person carrying the baby is not carrying a baby that is genetically tied to that person. Okay. So Betsy ended up carrying a baby, an embryo that was created that was my egg and my husband's sperm. So it was not her baby in any way. She basically was the vessel to grow this baby. And so technically that term is gestational carrier.
Right. Okay. That's great to clarify.
Anyways, all the things you learn when you go down this process. But Betsy had been evaluated, and it had been determined that she was a great candidate. She'd had 6 kids with no complicated pregnancies. So her oldest was, I think at the time, her oldest was 17 and her youngest was 7. So it'd been 7 years since her last pregnancy, and she'd had an IUD. But so they moved forward. Well, before that, I got to say, Betsy is so incredible and so amazing, but this decision was not taken lightly for her or her family, including her husband, her children. This is something that she prayed about. She spent time really making sure, even though her desire was there, that she was supposed to do this. And there was actually a time when she kind of came to us and said, "I don't know, as much as I want to do it, I'm not sure that I'm the one." And that was very nerve-wracking, as you're thinking you're going to grow this family this way, and your carrier decides maybe it's not the right thing, or I think in other circumstances, kids or husband or whoever it may be may not feel comfortable with it, and you have to stand back and reevaluate. But ultimately, her kids felt on board. Her husband could not have been more supportive, and she really felt like she wanted to move forward. So at that point, she took out the IUD, and we started down the process of getting her body ready to transfer our embryo. And on my end, we had to get those embryos in order to get them to her.
And what was that like emotionally to be pursuing pregnancy that way? Explain the emotions wrapped up, because I have not been through this.
It's a great question. And, you know, I think every surrogate gestational carrier situation is going to be different. You know, we're not working with an agency. We're working one-on-one with Betsy and an attorney, a reproductive attorney. That's something that people may not know exists, but when you pursue pregnancy this way, it's really important to have legal representation for both the intended parents, which would be my husband and I, and our carrier, which would be Betsy and her husband. There's, you know, crazy scenarios and situations that you have to go through. Things like, if my husband and I die while she's carrying our baby, where does the baby go?
Oh, wow.
Crazy things like that. Or if there's something that's determined that's wrong with the baby developmentally during the pregnancy, who makes the call and what happens to the baby? There's all of these things that have to be decided and very clearly spelled out legally, even when it is a family member as close as my sister-in-law. One thing that was helpful for us is that we know her so well, and you know, we kind of have the same thoughts and ideologies when it comes to babies and the morals of what we would do should we find ourselves in situations like that. So it helped that we were very much on the same page, and there was obviously a ton of trust that was already established because of our family relationship.
Sure, but you're going through scenarios and questions that most people do not ever think about. And so you might think you know how somebody's going to respond to that, or you might think you know what you think about it, but to really process through that, I'm sure surfaced a lot of interesting new thoughts.
It was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes, to say that we read questions that we had never thought about was definitely true.
Yeah.
And but it was so important for the process, and anyone who would maybe consider pursuing this, I think most fertility clinics, if not all fertility clinics, are regulated in the way that there has to be legal proceedings in place where, you know, each person has to be working with an attorney in this regard. A contract has to be drafted and signed. It's a very long, complicated contract, and I don't believe our clinic even would have treated us had we not come to them with all of that paperwork in place beforehand.
Wow, that is so interesting. And so then once she was ready and they did the transfer, then what happened?
Yeah, well, even before that, there was so much. You talked about the emotions, and I'm trying to think of a great way to condense this, but there were so many emotions. You know, all of a sudden, I technically wasn't infertile in that I had gotten pregnant very quickly. I had never thought about infertility. And all of a sudden, I found myself as a, quote, fertile woman sitting in an infertility clinic in New York. And all of a sudden, like, just very tangibly feeling, oh, this is what infertility feels like. This is what the friends that I and family that I know that have experienced this, this is what this is. Going in, you know, everything from vaginal ultrasounds to uterine lining thickness and medications and hormones and cycles. And it is just, it is this all-consuming world that is so very heavy. And all of a sudden I was a member of this infertility world. And I felt so much love and compassion for friends that had gone through this. And I just didn't understand just how consuming it was. So For our fertility, what had to happen first is I needed to go through an egg retrieval where they would extract eggs from me. They would fertilize those eggs to make embryos. They would grow those embryos for a certain amount of time in the lab, and then they would be genetically tested to make sure they were genetically normal embryos.
Okay.
That we would then literally ship across the country to Idaho, and they would be there to be implanted into my sister-in-law. So there were many steps, but the retrieval was kind of the first stage of the fertility treatments for me personally, and it was so hard. It was so, so hard. The hormones, the cost, I mean, and we, you know, I think that many times when you talk about surrogacy, one of the first things people think of is the crazy cost that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very fortunate in our situation working with a family member where she did not want to be paid. Where I don't think there's anything wrong with paying a surrogate. But in our particular situation, it wasn't needed for her family, and she truly was doing it for different reasons. So, and I just also want to say, I think that there can be a surrogate who is paid that's doing it absolutely for the right reasons.
Sure.
But in our circumstances, it just happened to be that that was saving us so much money that we were not having to pay an agency fee or pay our surrogate directly. And we will forever be grateful to Betsy for that incredible gift, as well as the daughter that allowed us to have. But even when you're not paying the surrogate, the medications and the fertility fees for the reproductive doctor I was seeing it, that Betsy was seeing, trust me, it definitely still added up. So in addition to the hormones you're injecting yourself, there's huge financial burden and stress associated with that. There's huge stress associated with how many embryos will we get? Will it be enough to do a transfer? Will they be genetically normal? And the reason we really felt strongly about the genetic testing is because we were putting an embryo in someone else, Betsy,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to do everything we could to avoid her having a miscarriage and her personally going through that, as well as us grieving a miscarriage or her family watching their mom go through a miscarriage.
Sure.
By doing the genetic testing, you eliminate some of those factors. So that's why we decided to do the genetic testing in our case.
Yeah, because there's got to be a lot of pressure thinking about what you're putting her through. So
exactly.
Like eliminating as many of those factors as possible, but realizing it's still beyond your control ultimately.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to feel that we had done everything on our end that we could possibly do to set her up for success. Selfishly for us, and absolutely for the health of her body, for her emotional health, for her family,
sure.
All of that. And I think it's also important to note that I felt very strongly about working with Betsy from the get-go, but my husband really did have some hesitations. And for a while, his preference definitely would have been maybe to work with someone that we didn't know.
Mm.
And I think because he was so terrified, if something happened to his sister, you know, we are forever bonded to her family, and if something had happened to her, how would we feel? Do you know what
sure.
I mean? And how we would feel responsible, and whether that would be something really extreme or even just, I don't know, something that she dealt with day to day for the rest of her life, could we handle that, knowing that because of her sacrifice for our family, she would potentially suffer? You know,
right.
There's just so many scenarios. Eventually we got on the same page, but that was a big concern for my husband, is watching his sister put herself at risk for our family.
Absolutely. And so it almost sounds like you didn't really have that much time for emotions. Like, there's so much logistics involved. I had no idea.
Yes, it became like a full-time job.
Sure.
But I have to say, like, as I was processing Leo's death, it was such a gift. It was such a gift for me to consume myself with something else. And whether that's healthy or not, I needed to escape the grief. And trust me, it was still there. It was still there every single day. And I still thought about Leo every single day. But it just gave me something else to focus on. And in a way, I felt, we talked a lot about on the last podcast about how I was so consumed with what Leo's purpose in life was. Why did he live for such a short amount of time? Why wasn't he just stillborn? Why was it necessary for him to live that amount of time? And I felt very strongly as we were pursuing this that if it had not been for Leo's life, we wouldn't be growing our family this way. Mm-hmm. So pursuing surrogacy and working with Betsy was a direct result of Leo's life and very much his purpose. And so as we were consumed with all of the details and the emotions that come with fertility treatments, I felt that he was very present in that. And in a way, I felt tied to him in that regard because we never would have done this had it not been for his life.
Yeah, that's had to be really comforting.
Yeah, and but then, you know, at times as I'm, you know, doing injections and hormones.
Not so comforting, yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, I hate that I am doing this because I lost a baby and I cannot carry children. I hate this. Mm. I just want to be like, you know, what feels like everybody else having a baby the old-fashioned way. You know, and every time I did those injections or every time I went to the appointment where they were counting follicles and all those things, it was another reminder that I cannot carry children. And I, as extreme as this sounds, I failed my baby Leo. My body could not sustain life for him. And so as good as it felt to be proactive, trust me, all of those proactive thoughts of moving forward and the excitement of potentially growing our family, it was laced with that grief. And I still had not let that go. But all that to say that there was a lot going on emotionally. Not only was I grieving my son, I was injecting myself with hormones. I had the stress of these fertility treatments, but I created that situation for myself. Or my husband and I decided that that's what we wanted to do, sure. And I would not have done it differently. I think it was the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can hear that. I can hear that.
Yeah.
And so then what happened?
So then my first retrieval, and for any of your listeners, I'm sure there are many who have gone through fertility treatments.
Yes.
You know, my OB had told me I should be such a great responder to IVF because I hadn't had any fertility issues and I was young for IVF. And it turns out I wasn't so awesome at IVF, which was a huge disappointment, just being that I didn't get fantastic results. I don't want to disregard what we did get because I know that there are people who have a much harder time getting results like we got, but my first retrieval, I got 6 eggs, which I think what they hope to get is about 10. And so I was disappointed by that number because you get the number of eggs and then you have to see how many are mature and then how many fertilized. So that number just continues to go down. Mm-hmm. But while they only got 6 eggs, we were very lucky that by the end of day 5, so they fertilize these embryos and they grow till day 5 before they biopsy them, to do the genetic testing, and at the end of day 5, 4 of our 6 embryos had made it to day 5, which those odds were fantastic. It was really something. There are many women who will start out with 20 eggs and have 4 left at day 5. So it's all relative. Like you know, you those numbers can be so consuming, and you're on message boards from 2011 being like, if I started with this many eggs, how many embryos will I have? And you're trying to compare your experience to someone else's, and it's just, it's so hard to not do that, but it's so different. So our 4 blastocysts went off to genetic testing, and of those 4, 3 were genetically normal, which is also a great number. And so those 3 embryos were then shipped by a medical shipping company to Idaho, where my sister-in-law was and had been preparing her body with hormone injections to have the transfer done. So at that point, we flew to Idaho for the transfer. It was exciting. This was in August, and we did the transfer. Everything looked awesome. In fact, I remember texting my mom the day of the transfer saying the doctor said things couldn't have gone better. We had elected to transfer 2 genetically normal embryos for a couple of reasons. Betsy felt comfortable carrying twins. That is something that she actually was totally on board with and felt like, if I'm going to help you guys get a family, let's do it. And if that means twins, that means twins. I am on board for that. We would just love to have as big a family as we could possibly have. Well, so mm-hmm. we we were thrilled with that. And also, by doing two, it increases the chances of one working.
Sure.
I will say, though, you are finding more and more fertility doctors now that are discouraging transferring to genetically normal embryos because they're getting so much better at IVF. A twin pregnancy is a high-risk pregnancy. Betsy was almost 40. If our doctor, if it had been up to our doctor, he would have had us only transfer one embryo. But we did two, and it didn't work. And that was so frustrating. We'd been given something between a 70 to 80% chance of success, given the quality of our embryos, the fact that they were genetically normal, and the fact that Betsy had had such a stellar pregnancy history. And I just remember thinking, in a line of 10 people, 8 people win and get pregnant, and 2 people don't. And we are one of the 2 people that did not get pregnant. Oh, how did that happen?
I know.
It felt like a huge blow. And this was within 6 months of Leo passing away. So It just felt like a lot.
Yeah, I would think so. And so were you even like wondering if you should try again?
Yeah, you know, we wonder, you know, we went through all sorts of emotions thinking, did the fertility clinic do a good job? Did they screw something up? Is that why this didn't work? Which I don't think that was the case
at all. But you want to blame somebody.
Betsy felt guilty, you know, which she should not have, but I think that's a natural feeling for a carrier. It is so much, it is financially so much, it is emotionally so much, it is physically so much, that when it does not work, you just want to blame someone. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to my doctor in New York shortly afterwards, because we had one embryo at this point, and this embryo, while genetically normal, was not graded very well. Basically, we've been advised by our doctor in Idaho that we might want to consider doing another retrieval because he didn't necessarily feel confident just transferring this one embryo, should we do it again, that wasn't top-notch quality.
Yeah.
So I was there having that conversation with her, and I basically said to her, why didn't it work? Do you think that this little clinic in Idaho, which, by the way, is a fabulous clinic, but I think just by mere fact of me being in big, bad New York City and them being in Idaho, thinking, is that why it didn't work? Because we were working with a smaller clinic in a smaller state. And she said, everyone gets one bum cycle of IVF. And sometimes we just don't know. And sometimes everything can be perfect and it doesn't work. And sometimes the conditions cannot be perfect and it does work. Mm. And so she says, I absolutely think it's worth trying again. And then she agreed that we should do another egg retrieval. And so I started that process again.
Wow.
And so I did the hormone injections again, and basically we're, you know, trying to get more eggs to create more embryos, so that we would have a nicely graded genetically normal embryo to transfer for round two. And at this point, our doctor in Idaho was fabulous. He was heartbroken for us. Actually, our doctor was going through similarly with his wife. They were she was an embryologist and he was a reproductive endocrinologist, and they were going through fertility treatments and had not been able to get pregnant. And there was something so wonderful about your doctor knowing what that feels like.
Sure.
And so we felt very much like he was committed to figuring out what we could do to improve our chances the second time around. And so we really focused on Betsy's lining and getting it thick. And he was really committed to things being as perfect as possible, so much so that we spent many months making things as perfect as possible. And now to hear, you know, 6 months time of working on that doesn't sound that long, but at the time, I cannot tell you how it just, everything feels like it takes so long. Even if it is months, IVF just drags on and on and on, especially when you have two people involved and it's not just you, but it's somebody else's body. It's all consuming in so many ways. So anyways, I did another egg retrieval. This time I got actually more eggs. I got 13 eggs. Ooh. Which I was thrilled with. Truly, I cried when they gave me the number. Could not have felt more relieved. But ironically, fewer of them made it to blastocysts.
Interesting.
So even though I started out with a larger number, and that's just an example of the emotional roller coaster that you go through with IVF. One day you get incredible news, and you're over the moon, and then the next day you get terrible news. And what was good news doesn't matter anymore because this is where you're at today. So I believe we had 3 of our 13 made it to day 5, and those 3 went on to genetic testing, and 2 of the 3 were genetically normal. So now we had 2 more genetically normal embryos that we shipped to Idaho, 3 altogether, and we worked with Betsy and her doctor, and it was, I mean, the woman was eating pineapple core and like drinking rose hip tea every day, and she was on some crazy lining diet. And mind you, this is us very much working together as a team. Betsy wanted this to work every bit as much as we did. And so not only was I sending her like, what if we did this or what if we did that? She was sending the same thing to me, in that we were so on the same page. And even after the failed first transfer, we couldn't have been more grateful for Betsy's support to continue forward and try it at least one more time.
Oh, how reassuring to know that for all the trouble that she was going through, she really wanted to be doing it.
She really did. And not just Betsy, I just can't give enough credit to her husband. And actually, it's funny that that's the first thing that makes me feel so emotional, but it had to have been so hard for him to watch her want something so badly and to go through something physically and emotionally and step up to the plate with their kids and be more involved with their kids and take on more of the responsibilities that she was used to doing. It is not just the woman who sacrifices mm-hmm. in these gestational carrier situations. It is her whole family. And he just went above and beyond. And after our first failed transfer, he called my husband, and I think he was the first one to call even before Betsy and say, we are still here. We are still in this. We are going to move forward. We are going to try again because we want to see our family grow. So I have so much love for him. And I really just appreciate how supportive he was to Betsy as we were all going through this. So
that's really sweet.
Yes, I apologize. This is such a long timeline.
No, this is so fascinating. I know people will love to hear the behind the scenes because this is just an unknown world to me, and I'm sure a lot of people.
And it was unknown to us too. And I hope that by sharing, it is helpful to someone, because I didn't have a lot of resources. And also, I think it's also interesting to mention that as we were pursuing this, I wasn't very public with it. There was a few friends that I'd shared with, but you know, one thing that was surprising to me, Jessica, was that I felt a little bit of guilt about us pursuing gestational surrogacy as opposed to adoption. And I think that on the surface, adoption felt like the more noble thing to do. But I knew where I was emotionally. And after looking into it a little bit, I realized very quickly that I was not in a place where I was ready to take on the role of adoptive parent. And I think there's a difference in wanting a baby and wanting to be an adoptive parent. And I think it's really important to make sure that you're ready for that, because I think that there are many, many wonderful couples out there who are ready to be adoptive parents. And I don't think it would have been right for us to pursue that not feeling ready to take on all that that entails.
Absolutely. I totally get that. But I can see the guilt as well.
Yeah. So anyways, that just a side note, I thought about that all the time. And as a result, I was a little bit more shy about sharing. And also just surrogacy in general, I think, comes with some stigmas. People assume that you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it, and some families have to make that sacrifice. But I was worried that people would think that I was just looking for the easy way out, which, trust me, this is not the easy way out.
This does not sound very easy, Kelsey.
But, you know, there's all these things. It's not as common. So you don't know what people are going to think. Even within the culture of our faith, I didn't know what people would think. People have different opinions if it's something you should do or not do. And then there were people outside of my faith where I thought, oh, look at her. She has one beautiful, healthy son. Why can't she just be happy with the baby that she has, or the child that she has? So your mind just plays all of these tricks with you. Mm-hmm. And I, looking back on it now from the vantage point that I have, I just hope that any woman who may be listening, that whether they've lost a baby or not, or they have children or they don't, and they're pursuing pursuing a family, growing a family, I hope that you feel that you can let go of some of that guilt, because what's right for one family is not necessarily always right for another family. But I think that just trusting your gut, knowing that you're doing what's best for your family, is all that matters. And kind of letting go of what other people might think.
Yeah, and that's definitely easier said than done. But I love that you tried. You did your best with that.
Yeah. So anyways, we get to the second transfer. We have these two excellent graded, genetically normal embryos. And also, once again, our doctor very much advised that we just transfer one embryo. But when he told me the last time that he only wanted to transfer one because he was worried that it just definitely was going to work, I wasn't about to just transfer one again. And once again, not just my decision. This is very much us with Betsy and so forth. But we decided to transfer the two well-graded genetically normal embryos. And we did so. And actually, this time, we weren't there for the transfer. I think that's interesting to note. I think that we were all like a little emotionally exhausted. And when I say all, I mean me, my husband, Betsy, even her husband. And flying there again, it almost felt like putting so much pressure on the situation. Like, the first time had been like, oh, we're never going to forget this date. We flew out and we were in the room when our baby or babies were transferred into Betsy. And then that didn't work. And it's like, I don't know. And also, we'd been spending so much money. Like, I just...
Yeah.
So we weren't there. And I felt... I don't know that I even felt guilty about that. I think that, honestly, at that point, I didn't really think it was going to work. Wow. I wanted it to work so badly, but actually the uterine lining hadn't gotten exactly where we'd wanted it, but we were still going to do it because Betsy was so willing and we all wanted to move forward. And so I would say that actually our circumstances weren't as ideal the second time around, but we still moved forward with the transfer. I also think it's important to note that this day was so special for many reasons. It happened to be March 29th, which was the day that Leo had passed away the year before. And we did not pick that date. If you've ever gone through fertility treatments, you know that everything is cycle-based, and your transfer is based on how your body's responding to the medications. And so the fact that we were transferring this embryo or these embryos into Betsy on the very day that we lost our son the year before was crazy.
Wow.
Just crazy. And I will forever be grateful that on March 29th, we will celebrate that was the day our daughter was transferred into Betsy, and have something hopeful to think about on that date, as opposed to the death of our son. And I say that because Leo had a birth date and a death date. And the first year I felt so much stress about, well, do we celebrate his birthday or his death day? Do we do something on both days? And then Memorial Day is a month late. Like, how do we do this? There's so many days that I feel like I'm supposed to be doing some epic thing to celebrate this special boy, but I don't know when. And so by having our transfer happen on this date, it gave me what I felt was permission to celebrate Leo on his birthday every year and really celebrate how special he was then. And then on the 29th, we celebrate that's when we created life. And I think that's pretty special.
That is tremendously special. Oh my gosh, that gives me chills. What are the chances? Yeah. Wow.
So it worked that time. It totally worked that time. And we were over the moon. We were elated. We were so excited. I'll never forget where I was Betsy cheated and took a home pregnancy test, which I was thrilled because it was positive. I don't know if she would have told me if it was negative, but I was on a flight when she texted me the picture of the positive pregnancy test, and I landed and I was by myself. I was traveling for work and I burst into tears on the plane. The man next to me asked me if I was all right, and I was like, yes, I'm fine. Like, it just was such a happy, and I will forever love San Francisco International Airport, SFO, for that reason.
Oh.
Because I had that happy moment there, and I called Betsy, and it just was, we were so excited, and we were so thrilled that it had worked. And you know, from there, I won't go into the extensive details of the pregnancy, but it was there were ups and downs with the pregnancy. Betsy is a champion. It was not the most comfortable. It was the least comfortable of her 7 pregnancies. And she ended up developing something called cholestasis.
Oh, which is the itchiness.
Yes. Bless her heart.
Poor thing.
Poor thing. I know. I had some prayers to Heavenly Father being like, come on. Hasn't she done enough?
A little easier on her.
To sacrifice enough.
Yes.
Can we just take this itching thing away from her? Because I felt so awful. But that happened, I think around 28 weeks she developed that. And as a result of that, and I'm sure many or some of your listeners will be familiar with this, but there is a small risk of stillbirth with this cholestasis because of some toxicity levels in your blood. So she was monitored much closer, and they decided to take the baby 36 weeks. We delivered her. It was an induction because of the cholestasis. And what was nice about that is that we knew exactly when the baby was coming. So we were able to be there, and we flew to Idaho, and my mom was there, my sister was there. Betsy was so warm and welcoming and had called me and said, this is your birth, and I really want anyone to be in the room that you would have in the room if you were having this baby.
Wow. I would not have said that.
I know. Everyone is different.
Yes.
And we had all just, we'd worked so hard, and I think that given the circumstances that surrounded this birth was so special in so many ways, and Betsy has a personality such that she really felt comfortable having those people in the room, and it was an incredibly sacred and special and joyful experience.
And so the second you held your baby, and tell us what her sweet name is.
Her name is Nora. Nora Elizabeth Egan, and Elizabeth is actually Betsy's full name. Betsy's
kind of
name for her, so it felt appropriate to honor Betsy in that way by giving her that middle name. But Nora is our baby.
I did not know that. That's really special. And so from the second you held her, what did that feel like, having not had the exhausting experience of birth, and you've had some very traumatic births, so this has got to be so different. What was that like holding her for the first time?
Well, I still felt exhausted.
I'm sure.
But Betsy had done so well. I mean, this woman's a pro at pregnancy and delivering babies. And what was incredible is that Betsy's doctor, Dr. Gregerson, he was really supportive of this, and he so supportive that he wanted me to deliver the baby. So, obviously within, you know, certain parameters, but so he gowned me up and I put on the gloves. So not only did the doctor hand me the baby, I literally pulled her from Betsy. I delivered my own baby, which not very many people have the opportunity to say. But one push and she was out. And Betsy was so incredible, and it was the most incredible moment of my life. It was, the word that comes to mind is joy. It's as if the floodgates had been opened on my eyes, and I was just streaming water with the happiest of tears you ever could have imagined. I would say I felt a huge sense of relief that she was here and that she was here safely. I felt very close to Leo. I felt like he was present with us that day. But I mostly just felt happy. And obviously infinitely grateful to Betsy for what she had done for our family. But I don't know that there is a word to describe how I felt. It was a very special experience, and I will certainly never forget how I felt that day.
What a unique and special and sacred experience. Thank you for going to such detail. That is so special. What do you want to tell Betsy? I mean, I'm sure you've told her this before, but what do you want to tell her?
Oh, man. So many things. And just on the idea of telling Betsy something, another just wonderful thing that has been a result of this is I have become so close to Betsy.
You're very close to her, yes.
Yes, in many ways, but I would consider her one of my best friends. And we were close by association of family beforehand, but not in this way. And not only but just she's just such a wonderful friend to me, and we've been through so much together. And if I were to tell her something that I haven't told her, you know, obviously we have thanked her countlessly, and I don't know that she knows just how many times a day I look at Nora and feel grateful for her in the most unexpected times and ways. To sit on a bench at church and feel like our family is more complete than it was before, and to have like a moment of gratitude for that, or to be at the playground with my son and see my daughter kicking on a blanket and just feel an overwhelming sense of gratitude that she is there. Betsy is not thinking every day about those individual moments where there's just not a day that goes by that I don't think hundreds of times how grateful I am that Nora is in our family. So I don't know that Betsy will ever understand the magnitude of what she's done for us, but it is infinite and it changes everything. Oh. Hopefully I'll get to watch this daughter grow up one day and become married and have her own children, and then I'll get to be a grandma. And it just changed everything for our family, and I love her so much, and I'm so grateful for her friendship, for her sacrifice, and for loving our family enough to do this for us.
That is amazing. That is so powerful. Good job, Betsy. You're amazing, Betsy. And if that wasn't enough, you also moved to the other side of the country.
We did. We just thought, why not throw in another huge life
change? Yeah, let's do that. We're not stressed out.
but this move actually is very much tied to what we went through. But after going through the stress that we went through with my first pregnancy with Oliver and losing Leo, we had been in New York, I don't know, 8+ years, something like that. And New York, we were so happy there, but it had been a rough couple of years. And as we were going through the ups and downs of the fertility treatments, and oh gosh, it just felt like so much. And I was having a really hard time finding my groove with work again, because I have this public job where it's important for me to be genuine and authentic, but it just felt so weird to like talk about guacamole when I was completely consumed with my son's death. Like it just did not feel authentic or genuine. So I was having a really hard time finding my groove with work in New York, and Robbie had had kind of like a soft job offer for a job in Portland, and initially we had turned it down because we thought, oh man, we've had enough change. The last thing we need to do is uproot Ollie and completely change where we're living. Like, we're focusing on getting a baby now. That's our family project. Like, we don't need to move. So he turned the job down. And then after we found out that Betsy was pregnant, they actually came back. They did not know she was pregnant. These were independent situations. Uh-huh. They had come back and said, you know, we just want to make sure that you really don't want this opportunity, because we would love to have you here. And at that point, all of a sudden, we felt like, you know what? Maybe this would be the perfect opportunity for us to start a new chapter for our family. We've been through so much here. It might feel nice to have a fresh start. And the more we thought about it, the more excited we got about it, which eventually led to Robbie accepting the offer. And we moved across the country. So we moved from New York City to Portland, Oregon. And that happened in September, and Nora came in November, so we arrived just a few months before she was born. And here we are now. My life looks 100% different than it did a year ago. I'm looking out my window at a forest as opposed to, like, cement buildings.
Wow.
I have two children. Well, I have three children, but I have two living children here in my home. That I get to love on each day, and we're in a completely different place.
Wow, and so your life looks so different. How are you different, Kelsey?
It's a great question, and I just am so different. That's the thing, is this has just been so transformative in so many ways. I think that, in fact, I actually feel a lot of stress about figuring out who I am now, because I feel that I've been through so much. And it has changed me to my very core. I I feel that I am better for it. I will say that. I think that as hard as it has been, I think that going through what we've gone through, I feel more empathetic and not just, oh, I feel so bad that that person has to go through that. I really feel like I just feel so much heartbreak and love for friends or family, whether it's experiencing loss or infertility. I sincerely feel this very tangible love for my loved ones who are going through those things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's important for me to be there for them and to offer experience where it's appropriate. And I'm grateful for being able to be in a position where I can maybe do that. I love my kids so much, like so very much. And I don't know that I would appreciate them in the way that I do had I not been through what I've been through. And I love my husband so much, for the same reasons. So, I think I'm still figuring out who I am, you know, and I aren't we all, right? Like we all evolve, but I would like to think, that I am better for what I've been through. It's been really hard, but my life, has been enriched because of the tragedies that I've been through, the triumphs that I have felt. And I'm, as hard as it is to say, I'm grateful for all of that. I truly am.
Wow. Oh man. This might be too personal of a question. What role does Leo play in your day-to-day life now? What type of space does he consume in your head on a day-to-day basis?
Well, that's, I'm happy to answer that question. So I think about Leo every day, absolutely. I see him in my children, which, by the way, it's so exciting to say the word children.
Yes, I'm sure.
One of those little things that Betsy probably doesn't know that I feel grateful for, but the opportunity to say, hey, Robbie, will you get the kids in the car? Like, just
kids, yeah.
Kids, plural. I'm so, so grateful.
Yeah.
But as little and teeny tiny as Leo was, he looked so much like Ollie. Mm. And I see features in Nora in him. And that may sound crazy, but I am telling you, he belongs to us. He did. He is such a part of our family. And so I love that when I look into the eyes of my children, I see my other child. And so he's very much there for me. I still assign his name with all of my credit card transactions.
I love that. I loved that detail from the last chat. Yes.
So there is, it's rare for me to have a day where I'm not writing out Leo, which really does bring me such joy. But one thing that's been hard as we welcomed Nora in relation to Leo is that, you know, the primary emotion that I had that tied me to Leo was sadness, right? So when I would feel sad about the loss of Leo, I would feel close to Leo. Hmm. And since having Nora, our lives have been filled with much more happiness. And a lot of that sadness has been filled with happiness. And I think that Leo would want it that way. I think he very much had a hand in all of this. And so from a intellectual point of view, I can see how lovely that is and how nice that is. But emotionally, sometimes I feel guilty for not feeling as much sadness as I felt at one point.
Sure.
Because I just felt so connected to him through that sadness. So every now and then, it just feels good to have a really good cry over Leo. Hmm. And it's probably at those times that I feel closest to him. And that, I don't know, that kind of comes up in unexpected times and places, and it's not always on the obvious times, on his birthday or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. Of course I'm thinking about him in those days, but sometimes it's something really unique that brings up those feelings, but I wonder how that will evolve and change over time, but there has been a little bit of guilt as we felt so happy to have Nora in our home, and we have felt more happiness than sadness in our family, that it's just been a different presence of him in our life. But I do feel that he is so much a part of Nora's story, and if it weren't for him, we would not have her. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that alone keeps him very present in my life, and that as I look at that daughter and raise her and see her reach the milestones that Leo never got to reach, I will see just as much of his hand in that as anyone else's.
Oh, wow. That is so beautiful and so powerful. And I'm sure for anybody that's experienced loss, regardless of whether it's a baby or an adult or a spouse or anybody that's been close to you that you've lost, that person or that child would never want you to not live because they are not. Right? And so I think that's really powerful to say, like, we're living and we're laughing and we're doing everything. We're bringing Nora into this world because of Leo, and because Leo would want us to go to the park and swing. And but I think it's really important to point out too, like, giving yourself that space for the grief, because you do want to remember him and you do want to go back to that place of, even if it is sadness, of closeness.
Definitely. Yeah, he I'm thinking of other silly examples. I think I shared this with you last time, but we told Ollie that Leo paints the sky every night, right? So so he'll say, "Mom, look, Leo's using purple," or "Leo's using orange." And so there are little things like that too, where he comes up in conversation almost daily for everyone here, and we're really grateful for that. And I know that will probably evolve over time.
Sure.
In fact, my sister sent me something. It was an image that she saw on Instagram. And it was so powerful, in the sense where it was three separate bags. One was like a big, almost like imagine a huge laundry sack, right? And it said grief in really big letters. And then the next one was like a smaller handbag that said grief, and it was about half the size. And then the third one was this teeny tiny coin purse that said grief. And it just illustrated how you never lose that grief. You always carry it with you. But it does lighten over time. And there would have been a time when I would have looked at that and thought, there's no way. Like, I can't imagine this ever feeling less of a burden than it feels now. But I really can relate to that now, where I've always got him with me. And even though it is that grief and sadness that connects me to him, he's always going to be with me. But I just don't feel in that all-consuming way as I once did.
And it's only been a year. Right?
Yeah. Like, well, it's been 2 years since Leo is 2 years, but a year since we had the success, where we started the pregnancy with Nora, and Nora is 6 months old now. We have come a long way, and it has been so much. And I'm actually really looking forward to being the person that when someone says, "How are you doing?" I can be like, "We're fine. What's going on?" "Not much." Like,
right.
There's been so much going on that I
am ready to be done
to not have anything going on, and just enjoy what's in front of me, and be very grateful for it.
Kelsey, thank you so much for sharing this. This has been so informational as far as the logistics of gestational carriers and things like that, but also just that you've been willing to share the emotional side of this journey has been so powerful. And I know it's going to offer so much hope to people, whether they've lost somebody or not. Anybody who's experienced grief in any form, realizing there is still joy to be found. You just have to hang on, but it's okay to not feel that joy all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Keep going. Keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Keep going. You are so amazing. You're an extraordinary mom of two kids.
Yay,
well, of three kids.
But these two kids that sleep in my house every night, I just can't. It's just so, it's so thrilling. I'm so grateful for it.
You're buckling two kids up in the car. You're putting kids in the cart. You're a mom of very special kids. And you continue to astound me. So thank you for sharing. And I just think you're so amazing. I can't wait to see what the next chapter holds for you, Kelsey. In a year.
I'm going to do a lot more hiking, and I just bought Birkenstocks. So.
Oh, you're totally an Oregonian now. Yeah.
Becoming an Oregonian, but we're loving it.
I love it so much. I'm going to link to everywhere people can find you on my website, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. But thanks, Kelsey. You are amazing. Congratulations on your sweet Nora.
Thank you. Thanks, Jessica. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Isn't Kelsey so remarkable? I can't think of many more people that would be this brave to share the ins and outs of such a challenge in their life.
And Betsy, I don't know how you feel about us talking about your uterine lining, but we really appreciate the significant role you played in helping Kelsey and Robbie to grow their family. You are a warrior mom. You are extraordinary too. And thank you, Kelsey, for coming back on to give us such a hopeful and amazingly positive update. This was such a treat to get to chat with you. Like I said, I'll link to everywhere you can follow Kelsey. We didn't even get to talk about her job or anything that she's been doing with cooking lately, but I'm going to link to everything on Extraordinary Moms Podcast of everywhere you can find Kelsey online, both her cooking shows and her HSN line and things like that, where you can find her on social media. She's the best. Her kids are darling. Come check out Nora, and I would just love it if you'd stop in. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3 or on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And I want to thank you for tuning in today. Share this podcast with a friend if you loved it. Thank you for being patient with the sound issues today, too. Of course, the gardener showed up as soon as I started recording, and so I was moving from room to room while she was talking so that I wouldn't interrupt her. So that's any rustling you heard, and if there's a blower in the background. I was trying to get away, but I live in a small house, so what can you do? So thanks for being understanding. If you love this show, please share it with a friend. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes so you never miss a new episode. And if you're newer around here, I welcome you. And I encourage you to dig back into the archives where there's tons of Extraordinary Mom interviews for you to indulge in. So thanks so much for tuning in. This Friday, I have a really amazing episode for you. It is with Janie Riley, and she is the founder of We Sleep, a sleep consultant business, and she is a sleep expert, and I've heard from so many of you that you can't get your baby or your toddlers or even your big kids to sleep. Your bedtime routines are stressful. Your babies are waking all throughout the night, and you are tired. Well, Janie and I are going to talk about how she started her sleep expert business and how she can give you a few tips to get started with having your baby sleep through the night. And she is so generous. She is giving away a consulting package for sleep. So if your baby or your toddler or your child is having some sleep issues, you are definitely going to want to check out our episode this Friday with Janie Riley, and you are going to want to enter that giveaway, and I'll give more details at that point. But she is an expert, and she clearly loves what she does, and so I learned so much from talking to her, and I know you will too. So thanks for tuning into the podcast. You're all so amazing, and I hope to see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.